Hello, my Workday Playdate peeps. Welcome back to Workday Playdate, where we ditch the dry corporate talk and we bring more play, more purpose, more power into the workplace. I'm your gal, your host, Erin Deal, and this month we are laser focused on a skill every leader thinks that they've mastered, but few truly have. We are talking about presenting this month on the show. And guess what? Presenting isn't just about what you say on a stage. It's how you show up every single day. It's how you lead your meetings, your one-on-ones, your Slack messages, and your culture. And today's guest, she is here to teach us how to lead like we give a damn, because honestly, that is how teams thrive. So let's get real. Too many leaders are still stuck in survival mode post-2020. They're juggling KPIs, managing burnout teams, and secretly Googling how to keep people from quitting without giving raises. Sound familiar? Here's the problem. We're focusing on performance without focusing on people, and no one understands that better than today's guest, Paula Davis. Let me give her a proper introduction. So Paula Davis is a former lawyer turned burnout prevention badass. She's the founder of the Stress and Resilience Institute, the author of Beating Burnout at Work, and a globally recognized expert on building resilient, thriving teams. She has trained over 40,000 soldiers in resilience with the U.S. Army. Yes, soldiers. Earned her master's in applied positive psychology from UPenn and advises leaders at organizations from Harvard Law to Fortune 500 companies. Basically, when Paula talks about leadership that works, we listen. Now, my peeps, listen, I know you. You're the leader who stays late to fix the slide deck. You're double checking the team's work and bringing the cupcakes for the birthdays. You care. You show up. You give a damn. But caring without boundaries leads to burnout. And data backs that up, my peeps. 76 of employees experience burnout sometimes, according to Gallup. The American Psychological Association found that 3 in 5 workers report negative impacts of work-related stress. And according to Deloitte, only 22% of people say their leaders are very effective at creating a culture where they can thrive. And here's what stings. Most of that burnout is tied to team dynamics and leadership. So the good news is we can fix it. We just need to change how we lead. And Paula is going to show us how. Let's get into our playdate with Paula Davis. Oh my gosh, Paula, welcome to Workday Playdate with Improve It. How are you?
I'm doing so well. Thank you so much, Erin. So excited to be here.
I'm so excited. I mean, I could just talk to you forever. We've already talked. I always, when hosts say things like, oh, we talked before we hit record. Like, I'm always like, why am I not recording that part? But it's so nice to get to know you before we jump into this. So let's set an intention really quick, because the intention for the show this month is all about presentation skills. We're talking about presenting, overcoming fears. I want to just use this episode today and your work and background to talk all about giving a damn, leading like you give a damn. And I just want to see if we can set a one-word intention for either something you want to give, something you want to receive during our time today.
Humor.
Yes. Tell me a little bit more about why you chose humor.
Sure. So for folks who are listening who didn't get a chance to hear us before you hit record, humor is a skill, and I think it's a trait that I really value and have valued for a really long time. It has been, I think, oftentimes suppressed, either just in the way that I've grown up, certainly during my law practice, not a lot of humor. But I've sort of refound it through my 9-year-old daughter, and love how much joy and lightness remembering humor and how much I love it has brought back to my life.
Am I allowed to say your daughter's name on the show?
Yes, of course.
Lucy. Okay. So I always ask people that. So I love that. And you and I talked about that, because I have a 6-year-old boy, Jackson, and it's such a joy and a gift to be able to re-see the world through their eyes. Isn't it? Like, you just forget how much play is infused in our lives as a child. And as we continue to just go through life, how we have to really fight to bring it back.
Yeah. And I will tell you, the last like handful of summers with her, like I tell people my summers tend to slow down. I don't travel as much for work. She's on a little bit of a different schedule because she's out of school. And there's a little bit more of a relaxed kind of slowness and playfulness that comes with summers, and how much I have just enjoyed like going to ball games and like the swimming pool and things that, you know, with my head down constantly with, you know, focus on my business and other things, she's really again kind of brought back into my life. And so I'm always looking forward to this time of year to reconnect with all of that.
Did she go to any camps? Is she in camps or what?
Yes.
Oh, I love it. Okay.
All the camps. Right now, presently, she is in marine biologist camp we have this place, just a gorgeous place down on the lakefront here in Milwaukee called Discovery World. And they put on lots of really interesting programs, and they have a museum open throughout the whole year, but they hold a number of just really, really interesting camps. And so she said she got to dissect a squid yesterday. And so I was wondering how that was going to go because she's very squeamish, but she loved it. She's a very hands-on, loves to be doing things kind of kid. So today they're going fishing. So we shall see.
I love that. Well, this is my first foray into summer camp. We had an amazing nanny with us for 3 years prior to him going to kindergarten. He was just in kindergarten. So this is his first summer of camps, and I'm loving it. And I also feel that too. It's such a, as having a child in the school system now, it's reminding me life is seasonal and different seasons have different traits. And summer to me, my husband and I are both like, this is so nice. Like, we're not running out the door at 10 to 7, getting him to school. You know, we're easing into the day, easing the evening down. And there's not just this like mad rush. And I'm feeling it too. So we are recording this in summer. It is not coming out to the fall. So y'all listening, you can just remember what summer felt like.
Yes.
So, okay. Well, I want to chat with you because you have an amazing book called Beating Burnout at Work. And the subtitle mentions that teams hold the secret. So let's just jump right into this. Why do you believe burnout is a team level issue?
Sure. So for a lot of reasons. So I burned out myself at the end of my law practice, and that is what really ushered me into this second act of my career. I didn't know what it was, and I wanted to go back and try and understand a little bit more about like why it happened, workplace well-being, workplace stress, and all of that. So I got my master's in applied positive psychology at the University of Pennsylvania, which talks about sort of that, you know, flourishing, thriving aspect or end of psychology. And, you know, I really put a lot of blame on myself coming out of my burnout experience once I kind of realized what it was and could put a name to it and thought like, what type of stress management memo did you miss that caused you to, you know, end up in this place? Because it was not a great place that I ended up in. Over time, whether it was through interviewing people about their burnout experiences, digging into their research more, creating programs, teaching, people and leaders and teams and what have you, I really start to put different pieces together and realize that the bigger driver of burnout is less about how I'm handling my stress or not handling my stress. It's more about what is the culture of the organization doing that's influencing people's stress? How is it that leaders are leading in a way that could potentially mitigate stress or exacerbate stress? And then collectively, I thought, well, why don't we look at this not through the big sort of culture lens, because that seems daunting, but if we looked at this from a team's lens, if we looked at this as our little teams, or teams that we are on a day-to-day basis, whether you're a team of three or a team of a couple hundred or even more, your little mini cultures. And if we could educate the little mini cultures about what types of strategies and techniques and frameworks really do benefit people and help build their energy and engagement and motivation and resilience and all of that positive psychological fuel, that could be a really great place to start in our organizations. And so I call it taking a me and we approach. So we have to think about burnout, not just through the lens of, individuals, what can we do and what can we give them? But systemically, it's also, what are the leadership dynamics involved? What are the team dynamics that are involved, and how can we start to address that in a full way? Because that's really what's going to help us start to move the needle on this issue. And it's still a problem. I mean, burnout rates are not going in the right direction right now.
That's right. That is right. Oh, I feel that on a real level. And I think you're so right to think, like, if you have such large companies, even if you're in a small company, taking the culture approach seems very daunting. Narrowing it in on the teams feels like we can at least start somewhere. We can start with like a nucleus and expand outward. So I love this concept. And I also know you coined a term called TNTs.
Oh, yes.
Right? Tiny noticeable things.
Yes.
What are TNTs? How do they help us improve workload management, team connection, all the things?
Yes. So that was another thing that I had realized that I have realized over the arc of the work that I've been doing over the last 15 years is that, I work with a lot of hard charging, very demanding professions. And I thought to myself and knew pretty quickly, I can't come in here with these really hard like strategies or, multi-dimensional pronged things and expect that somebody who has barely feels like they have an hour a week of spare time to have them implement and have it do something. And just simply in the research is also how I think. That's my quest, is like, what can I take out of this big research paper and noodle it and remodel it so that it fits somebody who's really stressed out or doing a really, demanding job, and have it be really simplified. And so that is where the TNTs came from, tiny noticeable things. And it's become really one of my big themes and messages for people is that, whether you're an individual contributor, part of the team itself, a leader of any level, it's really these small strategies done more consistently over time that the research even shows builds resilience, builds engagement, builds motivation. And it's what we're missing more so is the self-awareness about what it is that we need to be doing and then implementing that in a more strategic and intentional way. And so my second book, Lead Well, actually came out just earlier this year. And so I've carried that TNT theme through both layers, and it's certainly amplified in my newer book and in my programs. That's how I convey the frameworks and the strategies to people who are listening.
Okay, can you give us an example of a TNT? And when I think of TNT, do you know what I think of? Like, isn't that dynamite? Isn't that what they call it, like in cartoons? Like, I think of like...
That's a song too. I can't remember who sings it, but TNT.
Yeah, dynamite. I think of like literally Bugs Bunny and like Daffy Duck, like about to blow something up, but it's tiny noticeable things. So, okay. So give me an example of a TNT. As it relates to being a leader, what is a TNT that I can notice with somebody on my team?
Sure. There's a couple of things there's a couple that I think about right off the top of my head. And the first one is something that I call saying a thank you plus. So this is part of my attempt to help leaders start to magnify the impact that people are having in a very strategic way on their teams. And we all know, obviously, what a thank you is. We probably don't say it enough in our world of work. And so when I explain this skill, I always tell leaders and people, start with a thank you. Little thanks goes a long way, but I want them to very quickly add the plus piece. And the plus piece is to tag on or to add to the thank you the specific behavior or skill or strength that you saw displayed that led to the good outcome. So if I saw you, giving a thanks to somebody and you were kind of going on about it, and I said, well, why are you giving this person a thanks, or why do you appreciate them, or why are you affirming the job that they have done? The plus piece would be your response back to me. So if I could, if I can walk up to somebody on your team and just say, thanks, that's not a thank you plus. If I can replicate it, that's not it. The reason why it's sticky and it lands so differently is that it's a demonstration that you noticed what somebody did, and you're specifically telling it back to them. And so you're connecting dots between their job and the impact that it's having to you and on their team. And it goes much, much deeper. And so it can be as simple as saying something like, You know, thank you so much for the way that you organized the summaries of the, you know, the reports that I gave you. Your takeaways were clear and concise, and it helped me be able to brief the board in a very sophisticated and educated way. I mean, something that simple, when I've talked to people who have been on the receiving end of something like that, they'll be like, I remembered that like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. They're just inordinately powerful, but it doesn't take much time at all. But it's very strategic, that extra plus piece.
Yeah.
So plus piece is a big one.
Okay, so in improv, we call it yes and. Like what I'm hearing is yes and. I'm like, this is yes and. It's thank you and. Instead of yes, it's thank you and. And it's so true. I feel like if I'm receiving, if you were to say thank you and give me that and will stick with me, because instead of just saying thank you and not really elaborating, it's like almost like what we would call a yes, but like I'm giving you a thanks, I'm giving you a yes, but it's not really meaningful. It's not really deep. But the thank you and is, hey, thank you. Yes. For sharing that information and blah, 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 whatever you did right. And that is huge. I think a lot of people forget that part when it comes to leadership.
For sure. And I think the way that I explain it too, I sort of joke that the thank yous are important. It's a little jolt of positive emotion. Most people don't even hear that at work. I think, what is it? Something that I just read recently was about 60% of us feel underappreciated at work, and lack of recognition is one of the core six drivers of burnout. But it's that it's fleeting and it's momentary. And so it feels good and it's good and we should continue it and we should do it. But it's not sticky, right? And I analogize it to eating fast food, because fast food in the moment feels so good and it's that little comfort food hug and what have you. And then like 2 hours later, the effect has worn off and you're like, why did I do that?
Why?
Right? Why did I do that? And so that plus piece is the thing that's going to kind of continue. And the plus piece allows for what I call upward spirals. So you're telling somebody exactly what they did well. I can go replicate that. The next time you ask me or somebody else asks me to summarize some reports or what have you, I can remember the thing that I did for you that caused you to be so happy with what I did. And I can do it again. I can replicate it. And so you're giving people a path to replicating, you know, things that you really want to see continued in their, yes, in their work career.
Okay. Paul, I love this. I love it. I love it. I love it. There's so much good little nuggets in here. But I want to talk to you about what you're really getting to is meaning and mattering, right, at work. And I think so much has shifted, especially since the pandemic in 2020. And I think that these two things really make such a difference. They're like essential needs now for human beings. What have you seen change since that time period when it comes to these?
I think those things have always been present. And I know certainly for mattering, it's a fundamental human need that we have to know, not only at work, but in our communities and within our families, that we matter, right? And it's a chapter in my new book, Sticky Recognition and Mattering. And it's just sort of become this area of research that I'm super obsessed with. And I think one of the things that leaders still, you know, we're a handful of years out sort of kind of from the quote end of the pandemic, but I think one of the things that leaders still massively underappreciate about the pandemic is the way that it caused a lot of us to take a step back and say to ourselves, is this what I want? Is this how I want to work? Is this where I want to work? Is this how I want to live? Is this where I want to live? And even though we may be beyond it, psychologically, we aren't. We carry that mentality forward with us today in our work. So we're scanning our horizons and at work, and we're looking more deeply at, is this a place where I feel cared about and cared for? Does my leader have my back? Is there a sense of well-being here? Is my work meaningful? Do I feel like at the end of the day, like I'm waking up and what I'm doing is having an impact on somebody? Because guess what? I'm remembering a handful of years ago, you could get sick and, you know, things could change on a dime for you or for someone in your family or what have you. And that's still very front of mind for folks. And so, especially, you know, I don't want to necessarily turn this into a generations conversation, but I think it's also inherently more of a priority for younger millennials and Gen Z, and certainly the Gen Alphas who are going to be coming into the workplace. But I want to emphasize that it's a fundamental human need for all of us. And so I would absolutely support and agree. And as I take a step back and as I consistently in my work look at, okay, if burnout rates are still rising and disengagement levels are still rising and we're still having all of these, you know, sort of issues and problems with stress and other things at work, why? What haven't we figured out yet? And what are we not solving for? And that's really the subject of my new book, but it's a constellation of things. And I think if you dig, I'm always seeking to try and find like the root causes of stuff. I think that mattering deficit is really at the heart of a lot of it because it's what activates resilience. It's what activates well-being. It's what activates intrinsic motivation. It's really that essence or that driver to a lot of these good characteristics that we want to see in our teams. And we have really just kind of forgotten about or maybe not even appreciated or understood even what it was and how important it has become.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel like truly the things that you mentioned in the upfront of that were just understanding where do I want to work? Where do I want to be? Where do I want to live? How do I want to, what do I want to wear? What is my ideal scenario here? And I think a lot of those things shifted for a ton of people. I also think your generational comment, I think about Lucy and Jackson, mm-hmm. they're Gen Alpha, mm-hmm. our kids.
Yes. Yes.
And I have on my team, mostly millennials and some Gen Z. And it's just the heartbeat of that generation is compassion and kindness and love and mental health and wealth. And I am so here for that because it is a shift in humanity, which I think we need. And I think is becoming possible because of some of those really dig deep moments that we've all had to do in the past 5 years. And
yeah.
Keep going. Go, Paula, what you guys say?
No, I was just going to say it. And it's not just the pandemic, but the pandemic, you know, was sort of like, you know, quietly, not completely phased out, but, you know, it's for all intents and purposes, kind of in our rearview mirror. But what did we bounce right into? We bounced right into, you know, geopolitical and economic uncertainty, which is going to continue for a very long time. I mean, that's not going to end. And that's certainly something that's here to stay. And we bounced right into the AI conversation, right? All of a sudden we had this new sort of type of technology emerge onto the scene that is probably going to redo how most of us think about and execute our work on some level. And that's stressful also. So for the last 5-6 years, we have not had a moment of psychological rest. In terms of what we have been experiencing, they've all been these big sort of generational changes and differences and what have you. And when we experience those things, I mean, that really causes, you know, a shift in folks. And so I think that especially as we start to increase and talk more about the technology and how AI is going to shape and reshape work, that human-centered approach, that human-centeredness to our work and to how we lead is going to have to rise up with it and take shape. And so I'm also not quite sure enough organizations and leaders really see that connection yet, but the humanness about work is going to have to go along with the ride.
Ooh, Paula. I feel like I would like to change this conversation into an AI like specific, but we're not going to go there because I'm like, oh, that's a whole thing. And you're so right.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm going to tell you. Do I use ChatGPT? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Is it kind to me? Yes. Do I have a therapist? Yes. Does ChatGPT also act as my therapist in the interim between sessions? Yes. So like, I do think that we are going to, you know, utilize this AI in every facet when it comes to marketing, when it comes to sales, when it comes to copy, when it comes to strategy, processes, all these things. I'm already seeing massive changes with AI. But what AI can't do is feel a human heartbeat.
No, and it can't tell us that we matter and it can't empathize. I mean, I've been in enough programs and different conferences that I've been to with folks who are talking on the tech side of AI, you know, and I think they're a little bit more bullish on how or whether it could capture some of these human or humanness type traits. And maybe one day it will. But I really don't see AI fully replicating the entire suite of human experience. And I think that it will always, or maybe almost never, be able to replicate, you know, the empathy fully, right? Yes, it can be your therapist and kind of sit there and guide you, but that's very different than, you know, a therapist, you know, holding space for you to tear up and to cry and things like that, or teamwork or resilience or mental agility or other things that I think are just supremely human.
I hear that. I hear that, and I feel that on a real level. Okay, sorry to interrupt y'all, but let's be honest. Most presentations are one espresso shot away from a nap, but not yours, not after this. Welcome to Improve It Presentation Skills Workshop. If you don't know Improve It, we are an improv-infused talent development company for the new generation of work. We are where improv meets impact. Now, in just 2 hours in person or 90 minutes on Zoom in your comfiest pants, we'll help your team bring the energy, clarity, and confidence every presenter dreams of. We'll teach the magic formula, positivity plus preparation equals a productive presentation. You'll learn how to warm up your mind before you hit the mic, use your natural presentation style like a superpower, and stop sounding like a robot reading a script. Perfect for groups to up to 100 in person or 50 online, because yes, your camera on Zoom game matters too. So ditch the bullet points and bring the boom. Your team's next presentation, it's about to be their standing ovation moment. Book today at learntoimproveit.com. That's learntoimproveit.com. We'll bring the fun. You bring the people. Okay, we'll have you back to talk AI at a different time, because I could just dive into this rabbit hole, but peeps are tuning in. The peeps community is here because they want to build thriving teams. These people give a damn. They care. So I know you have a framework, the ABCs of meaning, autonomy, belonging, and challenge. Let me position it to you this way, okay? This is like a fun little improv game within this question. If you could build a team today using this framework, give us the like play-by-play of how you would build a thriving team using the ABC framework.
Yeah. No, I actually, this isn't a hypothetical. This is what I teach teams to do all the time.
Okay, so, great.
Yeah. So in fact, I was just talking to a group of lawyers about this. And so we hear at the, okay, so let's put a little bit of some research underpinning and some definitions and some words to this, okay? Because we throw out the word motivation a lot, and there's lots of different ways to talk about it and lots of different models. But the ABC is a specific brand or form of motivational theory called self-determination theory. It has about now a good 40 plus years of research underpinning it. And when you see, for example, when the Surgeon General unveiled his model for thriving workplaces a handful of years ago, when you look at a number of these big models that are coming out, all of them, whether that was intentional or not, have a measure of these ABCs sort of baked into them. And so I love how it's now becoming more prominent and prevalent, such that to me, if the essence again, or the core of creating a thriving team where I want you to feel that sense of intrinsic motivation, that's what this theory is meant to do. When we have these three needs met, I'm more likely to just roll into work and say, yes, I want to do this because it matches my goals, or because it's important to me, or because I see value in it, not because you're command and controlling me to do something, or because I'm getting a paycheck and all of that stuff is, you know, obviously we need to get paid, but we want more of our folks kind of illuminating that intrinsic sense of motivation. And that's what these ABCs really help folks to do. And so where I come in is to put kind of some methodology and some skills around, all right, great, what does that look like? What are some powerful tools or entry points to do that? And so with the autonomy piece, I always think about that as choose your own adventure. As humans, we have a fundamental need to want to choose our own adventure. We don't like being corralled and told or controlled about how we kind of want to live and work and what have you. But obviously there need to be some rules and things and what have you at work. And where this kind of control and flexibility conversation has gone with autonomy has been around where we work and when we work. And so it's limited, I think, leaders' ability to say like, well, I'm sorry, the job description just is what it is. I don't know what I can do to give people more flexibility and control and autonomy. And where I come in is, I talk about different levers that help us from perceive psychologically that we have more control and flexibility. So one of the key strategies that leaders and managers can do is when you're assigning a task or when you have to communicate to your team about a change that's happening or happened in the organization, give people the backstory, give the explanation, give the reasoning, give the why. Yes, I know this is the way we did it last year, but here's what we're doing this year. Here's what the company policy is. Here's what we decided in the background. Here's why it's shifted. Here's how this client came to be part of our organization. Here's the work that we're doing for this particular client and why it matters. So talking about that backstory is huge because it gives me psychological latitude to say, all right, yeah, it was A last year and B this year. I don't know if I like it or not, but I'm going to, you're giving me a little bit of wiggle room to kind of figure out for myself kind of how I'm landing on this position or understanding why I'm doing what I'm doing. So that's a big one. And then being very clear, leaders, being very clear about what types of decisions are people allowed to make in the context of their work, right? So when you're assigning a project or talking about something that your team is going to be working on, be very transparent and clear with them and say, like, here's what we're doing. Here's everybody's piece or role to this. Here are the types of things like you need to bring back to me if you see issues because the buck stops with me and I have to be the one to make this particular decision. Or no, you got a little bit of latitude here. Go run with it. Copy me on the emails, but this is in your court. And I'm just going to let you kind of go that we, again, you're giving that sort of like you're drawing for people the kind of the area or space that they have room to maneuver within. And so that is going to ignite our perception of autonomy, which is what leaders are supposed to, or, you know, is a good thing for them to do for that A bucket. So that's how I help them see how there are, and there are also more types of autonomy. There's social autonomy. Can you, you know, suggest that people connect or meet with certain people on other teams or in other areas of the organization and then let them go sort of foster and form those relationships. So there's different types of autonomy and educating leaders about what that means helps them as well. So that's at least A.
That's the A. That's autonomy. And then we get the B, which is belonging, which we talked a little bit about mattering, but what are some high level things? And like, if you were to say, here's two things for belonging that would help your team thrive, what would you say?
So I also think about belonging in terms of like the community and connection piece. So if we're going to foster a community, so lack of community is another one of the core drivers of burnout, right? And what does community mean at work now, since the way that we work has been reshifted and reshaped and gone back to normal and blown up again and all of that. And the first thing I would say is, I guess, a little bit more general, and that is understand that there's a variety of different levers that you can pull to create community and that you probably need to be thinking about, right? So it's thinking about what types of in-person, like whether it is like monthly get-togethers, quarterly whatevers, yearly retreats, some of those bigger type things that are going to help people stay connected, probably more so in person if that's possible. One of the areas that, or one of the strategies that I always tell leaders to do if they're not doing it is to start having, I call them Seinfeld meetings. So after the show.
You know, I hate that, Paula. We hate that in this improv world.
I know.
And we hate it. Oh, gross. Don't call it that.
The Seinfeld meetings, because it was always billed as a show about nothing. So I want leaders to be having meetings, I joke, meetings about nothing.
Yeah.
And what I mean is like, don't just go in there without but go in there without a business outcome associated with the meeting, right? It's just going in there to talk to people about how are you doing, which is not a question that I love. You know, what has your attention right now to me is a better question.
Ooh, I love that.
Yeah. Because if you ask me how am I doing and you're my boss, I'm going to say fine.
Yeah.
I'm going to always say fine unless I know you really, 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 really well. And even then.
Repeat that too, just so everybody can get that. So you said, instead of saying, how are you doing? Asking, what has your attention right now?
Yeah. What has your attention right now?
Love.
And that gives me the choice to say a work-related answer. After a while, I might, you know, share with you like, I had a crazy conversation with my teenager. She's really giving me a hard time. I'm really super stressed about that. So that's some insight for me as a leader, like, oh, okay, there's, you know, maybe some home stuff that's you know, kind of factoring in or what have you. But it's just, they don't have to be long, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of regular connection in a way that is getting at something that doesn't have like the monthly sales report graph or the reports or whatever tied to it.
We're just connecting. Can I tell you something on that? My team and I, we have these set meetings. We're virtual. We do try to get together every quarter in person, but we set 15 minutes for a small team on the upfront to just connect and just, and I'm going to change that question to how, what's, sometimes we say, what's a win from the week on our Thursday call. On Monday, it's like, how was your weekend? And so I think it's like, what has your attention right now is an even more interesting question to pose. So thank you for that, Paula. That's happening in the next Monday meeting, peeps.
No, you're welcome. And a lot of teams are virtual. And so this next strategy might not be as great of a fit, but it, I mean, we talk about virtual coffees and virtual lunches and things like that. But if your team is together and in person, one of my favorite studies about building connection is a study about a group of firefighters talking about how when they eat lunch together and eat lunch regularly, their team performance goes through the roof. And one of my dear friends is a firefighter, and he from a real world, he was like, even though that's a research paper, he said that's absolutely something that we do very intentionally because it builds that sense of cohesion. And it's just allowing us to kind of, you know, relax and chit chat and shoot the breeze or whatever it is that we're going to talk about and discuss. But having people, you know, having that community meal or that, you know, let's all go to the cafe or the cafeteria or two of us or three of us or what have you. Just know that that's doing more than just eating. So the other skill that I wanted to share is one of my favorites that I teach, and I'll give you a very short overview of it. It's called active constructive responding. So ACR.
Okay.
And it is about, we always think about building relationships, thinking about the moments when the, you know what hits the fan and we stop what we're doing and we rush in and we're working together and we're helping. When somebody shares a moment of good news, win, success, hey, the muffin this morning at breakfast was fabulous, we're oftentimes not capitalizing on those moments in the same way because they sort of like, whoop, we're not as humans psychologically wired to remember and seek out good news. And so we miss a lot of those micro moments or opportunities when people are sharing those wins and successes, or we might say like somebody, you know, shares a win or a success and we're like, oh, that's awesome. Great. And they don't say anything else. And there's not really much left of the conversation and it falls kind of flat. Sometimes when we share a win or a success or a good news, somebody might hijack the conversation and say something like, oh, me too. Right. Like I just went to Hawaii. Let me tell you all about my vacation and sort of leave your good news in the dust. Sometimes we issue spot and poke holes in people's good news and find fault in it or what could be wrong. It's like, oh, that's great. You want to buy a new house right now? Man, interest rates really stink. Like, what were you thinking, kind of? And the only sort of response style that builds and solidifies good relationships is that active constructive responding or ACR, which is simply almost a little bit like your yes and the conversation that we were having, where you notice what it is and you just ask one or two more questions about whatever the good thing is, right? And so when we have things we're happy about, or that is a win or a success or good news, we want to explain them, right? We want to show you a picture. We want to wallow in it a little bit. And the research would suggest 45 seconds to a minute is enough to help kind of cement those connections and those bonds. And so think about that with your team. Think about that at home. Are we in that active, constructive, responding, capitalizing on somebody's moment of good news or win or success consistently? And most of us are not.
I freaking love it. Okay, so we got autonomy, belonging, the C. Did we hit on challenge? Do you want to hit on challenge? What? Just tell me high level what challenge, when you say challenge, what do you mean?
So when I say challenge, I mean growth. So we do not, it's one of the things that most consistently shows up when you're looking at, you know, what makes people stay at organizations, what makes people happy at work, you know, however you phrase it, knowing that we have a measure of, or the ability to pursue work that is meaningful to us, that's challenging to us, that helps us grow, that keeps us moving in the direction that we want to grow in our career, so that we're not stagnating. Right. So it's that sense. It's, do I have opportunities for growth and development, particularly in this organization? And one of the things here that leaders can do that I think is really important is to know what each of the people on their teams is seeking, right? What do you want to develop? What do you want to get better at? What is important to you in that conversation? And then look for opportunities for people to practice that, right? So we're talking about, you're talking about presentation skills kind of generally in this series of podcasts. So a lot of people will say that one of the things that they want to improve is their speaking capabilities in their role at work. So as a leader, then give them opportunities to lead a team meeting, have them present at trade or industry conferences, you know, set a goal, like once a year, twice a year. And it's going to feel like, so if I want to improve my speaking ability, that means I'm probably feel like I'm not so great at it. I'm going to feel nervous and I'm going to feel like, I don't know that I really want to do this, but it's like pushing people kind of outside of their comfort zone a little bit is, according to the research, one of the most valuable things that you can do to start building a mindset of, I think I can, back to that little engine that could kind of book. So that when you go into future, you know, moments where you need to speak and they become higher level and with higher consequences attached to them, your first activity or your first way of thinking is going to be, I think I can do this. And you're just going to, you know, kind of try it out. So it all starts with giving people more of those challenge or mastery experience opportunities.
Paula! Okay, this is amazing. Because I feel like if I'm tuning in today, I have got so many, little juicy nuggets that I can use to talk about having my team thrive. I care. I give a damn. So I love this conversation, and I would talk to you forever. Okay. But I have to ask you my question that I ask every single guest.
Yes.
Because this is Workday Playdate. I want to know, how are you going to make work more playful today?
Ooh, how am I going to make work more playful today? So I have to work on, copy for my new burnout certificate course that I'm launching this fall. And I may take a moment to think about how I could introduce some moments of humor and play into that curriculum. Because until we talked, I had not thought about it. And I think it's a really important, especially when you're talking about burnout, right? It doesn't have to be so daunting. There can be some levity associated with it.
Paula, that's what's up. That was our intention today, was to bring humor. And guess what?
Yes.
You did it. You did it. Okay. So, and then I know our peeps are going to want to reach out to you. Where's the best place they can find you? Where can they get your books? Yes. Tell them all the things.
Yes. So a good spot for all of that is going to be my website, which is stressandresilience.com. But you can buy the books there. You can buy the books on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, all the places. But you'll see certificate course information on my website, all my trainings and workshops, all the good stuff.
All there. Okay. Well, Paula, it has been so fun chatting with you. I've learned a lot. Thought about my own team a lot during this conversation too. And I got some juicy little chicken nuggets. I'm going to dip them in some sauce. Think about it. And I loved having you. So thank you so much for being here. Peeps, check out Paula Davis. And this concludes our play date. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, Erin.
My peeps, thank you so much to our guest Paula for bringing her wisdom, her warmth, her wildly practical insights to us today. And to you, my dear peep, here's your Workday Playdate challenge of the week. Your homework is to pick one TNT, one tiny noticeable thing to try this week. Maybe it's ending a meeting 5 minutes early. Maybe it's a handwritten thank you note. Maybe it's just asking your teams, instead of how are you, asking what has been on your mind lately. What has been that thing that is stressing you out, or what's on your mind right now? Then ask yourself, am I leading like I give a damn? And what's one small shift I can make that brings more autonomy, belonging, or challenge to my team? Remember that meaningful work isn't about perks or ping pong tables. It's about presence. It's about purpose, and it starts with you. So my peeps, until next time, I want you to keep playing, keep leading, and keep showing your team that they matter, because when you give a damn, it shows. I'll see you on the next play date.